This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Today we have a huge show. Now don't forget, the coming out ball is on tonight. Saturday Magazine starts now.
From Joy 94.9, this is Saturday Magazine.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au. This is Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9's flagship news, current affairs and lifestyle program. A healthy mix of local and national news, current affairs and lifestyle stories. Headed by two sanctimonious old windbags, Macca and Tam. But it is all framed within a queer perspective. I'm Macca. Good morning. It's the 6th of October. It's currently 13 degrees, heading for a top of 23. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet and pay my respects to elders past and present. I'd also like to pay my respects and honour the elders from the diverse LGBTQ communities who work tirelessly and diligently to promote the health, well-being and justice of our people, families and communities. Now today, His Eminence, Lord Bollard, Robert Dolly Doyle, joins us for the first hour.
That's a nice touch. I like that. I'm back again next week for that. That's pretty good.
Well, you see, His Eminence, that's what Justin Smith from 3AW calls you, isn't it?
It is, yes, it is. Yes, yes. If you were the Queen.
Not a Queen.
But the Queen. I have a special title that only she uses.
Now, what is it again?
Well-beloved and right trusty. How good is that?
Well, she obviously doesn't know you.
I really like the
ceremonial title only. You know?
Robert, I love the trusty bit. It sounds like a dog's name.
Yeah, it does.
Yes.
Doesn't it? Good boy.
Yeah. Here, trusty. Woof, woof. Yeah.
So, Robert is here for the whole first hour. In the second hour, how's it pronounced, Tass? The guy.
Second hour, the whole show falls away, I think is what you're trying to say.
It does, yeah. Trades Hall are going to talk to us about their support for the campaign for marriage equality.
Will Strachey.
Yeah. Okay. And then Bowen Lazay from Fearless Movement Collective. They're going to talk to us about their work supporting rainbow families with nutrition and personal training. Mark Hawthorne, the Victorian publisher of Fairfax, was going to join us.
But he's lost his voice,
I hear. I reckon he's got a dose of SARS.
I saw Mark yesterday, actually. He wasn't looking terrific.
No, he wasn't. Yeah. So he'll probably be listening.
Yeah.
So
terrific bloke, by the way.
He is. He's great bloke. Yep. Great bloke.
He might have the lurgy that I had last week.
He could have.
And the good treasurer has this week.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. But we have got, I mean, people who've been immunised for flu can still get flu, and it can be at various degrees. So, you know, if you're feeling really crook and you can't get out of bed and you can't get the head off the pillow and your joints are aching, you know, all that sort of stuff, you may have a strain of flu, not just a cold or something.
Cold.
So that's when you do need to seek medical attention because it's a very serious disease.
Robert, the rumour is that this year's flu vaccine didn't quite hit the mark.
Yeah, it's got three strains in it, A, B and C. It's developed down at the Royal Melbourne Hospital, the Victorian Infectious Diseases Reference Laboratory, and it's not hit and miss, but every year as the strains mutate, they kind of cook up a different recipe, and there is a theory that maybe this time they've missed a strain. I don't know. The other point is it might be that were it not for this vaccine, we'd be facing a pandemic of terrifying proportions. We are getting some people turning up at the Royal Melbourne who are truly sick, and we'll take care of those, but we're also getting an equal number who turn up, and we're not saying don't, we'd say we'd rather have you turn up. They haven't actually got the flu, they've got flu-like symptoms, but it's something else. It might be a bad cold or, you know, early onset hay fever, but there's no doubt that if you are having those sort of early flu symptoms, see your doctor or come to an emergency department because you can be really sick.
The other thing that's very interesting about this flu season is that ordinarily it's a June, July, August period.
Correct.
This year it started in April and it's still going.
It's still going.
Yeah.
And we're about to hit hay fever season and don't I know it. And the other thing we've got to watch out for is that outbreak of Storm Aspen that we had last time as well. And the Storm Aspen we think was caused by rain after a very, very dry winter. And that's what we've had. So we've got all the preconditions for that. So if people's, you know, respiratory systems are giving them some problems, don't put up with it. Go and see your doctor and get checked out, because it could be any one of a number of things.
Could be.
Yep.
Now, I want to kick off the campaign today to put Peter Credlin into the federal seat of Menzies. Kevin Andrews has been
there. Where did that come from?
Yeah, I know. Left field. That one, Macca.
Kevin Andrews.
We were talking about flu season. You've gone straight to Menzies.
Well, you know, it's all different kinds of disease. And I think Kevin Andrews has been there long enough. I think Peter Credlin would...
Speaking of disease, you mean?
Come on, you two.
Would make a sterling member for Menzies. I used to live in Menzies.
Did you?
Yes. And Kevin came and knocked on my door one day.
Oh, I remember. Did you... Is it true?
It involves a hose.
That you turned a hose on him?
Yes, I did.
A garden hose. Well...
So disrespectful, Macca.
He's on my bloody property.
So disrespectful. Where is Menzies, by the way? What suburbs does it cover?
Donvale, Doncaster, parts of Templestowe.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, Kevin.
That's Clapper territory, isn't it?
No,
well,
that's
Clapper, not the clap.
You know, you mean like as in Happy Clapper?
Yes.
Oh, I think most of those outer suburban areas have quite large evangelical churches. Out the other side, sort of, you know, Beaconsfield, Narre Warren, that way, there are quite a number as well. It's a very big one in Richmond.
There is too.
So it's a remarkable movement.
Well, town hall's a place of worship.
Well. Place of your worship.
Yes. Exactly.
Me.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's very good.
That's very good. He's very good today. So,
you know what's on tonight at Town Hall?
No.
It's the coming out again ball.
Oh, coming out
you
again.
You call it the coming out ball. I don't want, you know, 15-year-olds who suddenly think, yep, this is the time to make the decision and be public and turn up to find a whole lot of people who are over 65.
Right.
Because that's who's going to be there.
Okay.
So it's not quite our generation, Macca. Not quite.
You're getting close.
Just by accident, I ran into the wonderful Robin Archer in the street last weekend. She was in Albert Park and we had a talk. And she's hosting it tonight. And she's just... I love her work. And she was very excited about it. So she was very disrespectful about her peer group and their orientation, but that's exactly what I'd expect from Robin Archer. But it should be a good night. Well, the thing is, I love it that it's a celebration, because we should never forget, even though we think we're going through some tough times, people who are older and LGBTI, you know, went through very difficult discriminatory times, including criminalisation.
Mm.
And so to be able to celebrate now and come out again, I think is a terrific thing. We'll get more than 500 people there tonight.
Wow.
And let's not underestimate, Robert, the impact that this postal vote is having on a lot of those people.
Absolutely.
For a lot of them, it's actually raising a form of PTSD. And we're getting reports from all over the place that this is the case, including I heard from TGV the other day that they actually had a couple of suicides reported as well.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah.
I clocked in with, again, at the Royal Melbourne. We're the biggest mental health provider in the state, and we also provide youth through Origin. And I clocked in with our wonderful head of mental health, Professor Ruth Fine.
Is that where she landed?
Yes, yeah, she came to be head of mental health for me.
So she went from the east to northwest.
Yeah, and she was the chief psychiatrist for the state for a while as well. She's just a wonderful person.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
And she's doing some great work for me. Mental health. I mean, I admire lots of professions, and there are lots that I couldn't do. Mental health professionals, I just am in awe of the work that they do. And the number of them these days who are facing violence in the workplace and really unacceptable behaviours towards them. Not something that happened a generation ago, but we're keeping a bit of an eye on that too, Tass, just to make sure that if young people in particular feel they need support and don't have it, that we're able to offer it through our mental health services, particularly our outreach ones.
Now, we've got a couple of messages, Robert.
Yep.
One is disappointed that Late Line has been axed. Which is a shame.
Yeah, I always enjoyed outreach, I must say.
Yes, same.
Yeah.
Menzies is turning in his grave at his beloved party.
I've got one as well, Macca.
And another one here that electorate is wealthy people from other countries.
That's not what it says, actually,
no.
Macca. And the message that I have is from Maria, and she reminds us that it's actually Peter, not Peter.
Yeah, it's Peter.
And
Peter.
Actually, Paul, turn your microphone on. You can tell us what you've got.
I just had a text from my sister who's in the UK listening, and she just sent me a little message saying, I love your mare. Look at that.
Oh, isn't that nice?
I love your mare.
Oh.
Good morning or good evening to you.
Yes. Mm. Oh, that's... Thank her.
There you go, another fan. Get her a post. Get her a postal vote.
The family's not an entire dead loss then, are they?
No.
That's great.
You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca, Tass and Robert Doyle.
The Mayor.
His Eminence.
Thank you.
Lord Bollard.
Thank you.
And when we come back, he's going to do a special treat for us. He's going to do a live read. So stay tuned.
Because there's more.
There's more.
Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Looking for IT expertise at a price you can afford? Let Radcomp help you create something amazing. IT can be complicated, expensive, and takes you away from what is most important, running your business. If you know you need to update your IT systems or have an ongoing problem that's slowly bringing you down, we can help build an IT strategy that fits your budget, fits your current needs, and fits the direction your business is going in the future. Discover why so many businesses are turning to the team at Radcomp. Give us a call today, 1300 237 196. Joy sponsor.
Hi, I'm Ruby.
I'm James.
I'm Anthony.
And we are Triple Bypass.
Tell your bisexual friends they are bi-utiful.
Help them to live free and buy hard.
Don't leave your best buys or buy themselves. Listen to Triple Bypass on Tuesdays at 9 p.m.
Or check out our podcast at joy.org.au/triple bypass.
Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Joy 94.9. Radio that's out and proud. Joy.
Here we go with cash for comment from the Lord Mayor. Virgin Australia's upside the off-season sale is on now. Now, almost everyone goes on holiday in peak season. Between tour buses, backpackers, big crowds, it can be overwhelming. But that's the upside of off-season. Every beach is a private beach. You can have the sights all to yourself. At Joy sponsor Virgin Australia, take advantage of up to 30% off domestic flights along with discounts on international ones and leave the hustle and bustle behind. Just visit virginaustralia.com.au today to discover the upside of the off-season. Sale ends October 8. Conditions apply.
There you go. How was that? Cash for comment. Fantastic.
Yeah, where's my cash? I made the comment.
He wants the money. He wants.
Yeah, come on.
He wants the money.
I know this is Joy. I know what remuneration is available
that's
here.
Right. That's right. Just while we interested in your views on Nick Xenophon, and Tass and I were talking before the show, and Tass thinks he smells a rat.
Well, I don't. I'm sitting next to you, and I don't smell anything.
He's very good today, isn't he?
Sorry, I'm being very insulting today.
No, it's all right.
Look, I don't know about a rat, but I mean, of all the bombshells of bombshells, this one is just out of nowhere, isn't it? I mean, 10 years of being, you know, not just power maker and power dealer and kingmaker.
Broker, power broker.
But he's loved every moment of it.
Yes, yes.
I mean, he just soaks it all up. He doesn't seem to me to be a person racked with self-doubt. And to make this choice is just bizarre. Because you'd have to say, unless he's, what he's figuring is this, that, you know, if the polls are correct, then Labor wins the next election federally. And it may be a big enough win that even with a half Senate election, Labor controls the Senate as well.
Mm.
Then he becomes completely irrelevant, completely and utterly irrelevant, because no government needs to court him for votes. But I would have thought, even if Labor does win the next election, and that's a long way from a lay-down mazair, by the way, and it's certainly not a concession from me, but I always think the Senate's much tougher these days. It's tougher to grab Senate. So for him to leave it, what does it say for the people in his party he's left behind? I mean, what do they do? They'll be like a rudderless dinghy. And B, I don't know what effect he expects to have in South Australia. You know, there was an element of theatre about it, wasn't it? You know, politics is broken, you know, presumably I'm just the man to fix it. But I wish I could give you an answer about what it means, but I just don't know.
So what do you think might happen in the High Court? I mean, does it continue or will it actually end up?
It rolls on, and who knows whether that's a part of it or not. I just simply don't. But it just seems to me to be a very, very strange move. I know lots of people who go from state to federal. I mean, that's a reasonably common sort of stepping stone.
But not the other way.
I mean, I was never tempted to go federal because I was not faintly interested in those issues. I was interested in, you know, education, health, law and order, transport, you know, the big service things that touch people's lives.
It feels very odd to me.
It feels very odd.
You're right. It doesn't pass that sniff test, does it?
No.
It does reverse the normal rule of a dog returning to its vomit.
Thank you, Mac. You can always be relied upon to elevate debate, can't you?
But I did think... Thank you. I did think that... okay, let's assume that the Senate... that the High Court finds he wasn't validly elected, excuse me.
Yeah.
So what will happen there is count back. So it would mean that the second place on the Senate ticket... but that's the person's already in the Senate.
Yeah.
So it would be the third place. Now... So there'll still be a Xenophon team senator. Now, by resigning now, he ensures that, of course, he runs the party. Yeah. That most likely will be who they nominate.
Yeah.
But Robert's right. They'll still be a rudderless team.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, is he going to actually try to govern that team from outside Parliament?
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, these things have happened before. They happened in Queensland, for example.
Yeah, but it didn't work that well, did it?
No, it didn't.
No, of course it doesn't, and it never will. But the other part is, if you think about it, and that's why I agree with Tass, it just doesn't feel or smell right. He's gone from being power broker in the federal Parliament... to South Australian politics, for God's sake.
Yes.
I mean, you know, when was the last big decision that affected your life coming out of the Parliament of South Australia?
Well, when the lights went out.
it's a different thing. Matter of fact, they're very rarely on.
I'm just going to leave this.
One of the great energy saving devices of the nation.
Oh. I don't know what to say to him this morning. He's been thinking these up all week.
No, that's right. Yeah, not all week. I was just up to about two or three this morning.
So the other conversation that Mac and I had before you arrived, Robert, was really about...
Was it about me?
No, it wasn't about you. Wasn't about you.
Good.
Other than nice things, of course.
Yeah, lovely.
But in relation to Xenophon, we talked about his policy contribution.
Yeah.
And yes, he did come in on a very strong platform of anti-gambling reform. However... in all of his dealings, he has been silent on gambling reform.
Yep.
So when you looked at things like Gonski 2,
yep.
Where was gambling?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He did a deal for himself, yep. But there was no gambling reform. So, you know...
He's moved away from that base. Look, by the way, I don't know if people have ever been in South Australia during an election. They have the most horrible habit there that I hope we never see here. They all just plaster these little posters on every lamppost all over the place.
Yes,
it just looks like everywhere has been littered. And, of course, after the election, do their faithful workers go around and take them all down? Of course they don't. But even then, the element, because he called them, you know, X-Men, you know, this sort of stuff.
Yes.
And there's all this Marvel Comics superhero stuff. So I'm with Tass. I'm at a complete loss to explain why. And, you know, I would have to say that it is... there must be something behind that motivating it that we don't know. Otherwise, it's just not a natural step.
What's the name of the South Australian opposition leader?
I don't know.
Either to South Australia. No, I mean, I would know his name if I read it. But, I mean, they actually got in the last election in two-party preferred. They got 53%.
They didn't win government.
And they didn't win government.
Notice that Jay Weatherill was still premier there.
Yeah.
But, look, that can happen. That's one of the anomalies, isn't it? That, you know, one of the things that you're terrified about is that your campaign strengthens you in the seats you already have, so you're getting lots and lots of votes, but you lose the close ones.
Yeah.
So you might pull a whole lot more votes, but you don't get the seats. And that's why marginal seat campaigning is such an important element of state and federal elections now, and is quite different from the campaigning that you do in the other seats. You know, so it's so sophisticated now. Are you sandbagging a seat? You're not taking it for granted. Are you really going all out? Is your digital campaign irritating people and turning them off rather than, you know, helping them? How much personal stuff do you need to do? Because there are some politicians, to meet them means you vote for them. There are other politicians that is exactly the opposite.
Yes.
You meet them and there's no way you're going to vote for them. So all those things need need
so
to be
parties have to make a decision about who they put out and who they don't.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And look, it was, you might recall, Tass, when John Howard thought he was going to lose the 2000 election, and we had people jumping off all over the place, even, you know, really good marginal campaigners like Mike Wooldridge, and the by-election in Aston came along.
Yes.
And when they polled into Aston to work out, okay, who is the average person in Aston? Who are we looking at here? And it was a mid-30s, small business proprietor, male, married, probably with two, maybe three children. That was Chris Pearce. So, in fact, the candidate that was chosen for that seat was like a mirror of of that seat. And they won that by-election, and then Howard goes on to be the second longest-serving Prime Minister. But that's the sort of... I mean, it sounds awful. It sounds almost like genetic selection, doesn't it? But in fact, when you think about it, it's actually pretty smart, because what you're saying is our candidate congruent with the electorate? You know, so your candidate for Melbourne Ports is going to be a different sort of kettle of fish from your candidate for Menzies, I would suggest.
Can,
just a little bit of political inside acumen there for
right,
you.
All right,
thank you for that. Have you got any more insights about where it may go?
Can Jed Carney win Brunswick?
I don't think so.
No?
I think this is a big error. I think they are burning a really good candidate. I think the Greens have got it, you know, locked up. It's just...
Do you think Jane could have held it?
That would have been dicey. I mean, the benefits of incumbency and the benefits of being the local member are there, but they're not as great as people think. And I've seen really good local members overtaken by the tide, and that's all there is to it. You know, I saw one of the, and I actually saw him a while ago. You'd remember him, Joseph O'Reilly.
Oh yes.
Great candidate.
Was he back in Melbourne? Is he?
No, he was not. He was back for.
He's living in Vietnam.
Yeah, he is. But look, he was a great candidate for the seat of Prahran, and a very, you know, he would have been a very good member of parliament, but he was up against somebody in Leonie Burke and up against a swing that was coming towards the Conservative side that meant even the best candidate, who ran, by the way, a great campaign with the best campaign materials I'd seen to date, you know, in that seat, and he still couldn't get across the line. So the personality...
I've got a theory about that. He ran in the 99 election, and that was the election that Brax won.
Yes.
Okay, so there was a swing away from government towards Labor.
Yep.
He lost that, partly, I think, because he ran too hard on two issues. Yeah. He ran the euthanasia ticket.
Yes.
And he went against his party line. And secondly, he ran on a gay ticket, which marginalised some of the population.
Yeah. And look, when you talk about seats, of all of the seats, Prahran is one of the most difficult because it has something like a 30 to 40% turnover of voters between elections.
Yes.
So you don't, you know, when you talk about can Jane hold the seat, that tends to be quite a stable seat. And so you would think incumbency would help. But I think, you know, I think the Greens are doing very well in the inner city, and it's something that really worries the two major parties, probably the Labor Party more than my side, because it's their seats that they're likely to win.
Now the Greens also are going to face a pretty strong challenge in the state seat of Melbourne.
Yes. Yes.
With Jennifer Kennis back
then. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She was one of your colleagues, Robin.
I know Jen very well. She was on council with me before she became a state member of parliament. And in fact, she ran against one of my Greens councillors, and they were very good friends. So it was actually a very civil political sort of battle. She then lost it, of course. And she actually sits on my board at Melbourne Health. I think she's a terrific person. Whether you can take it away from Ellen Sandell, I don't know. You know, as I say...
Who is she, though?
Ellen?
Yes.
Well, that's a very good question. She is the Greens member for Melbourne.
That's all we know about her.
But that's all... at the moment, that's probably all you do need to know in the inner city.
Mm.
You know, it's a really interesting phenomenon. In the centre of Melbourne is... You know, you would have to say it's the strongest Greens stronghold in the nation.
What about Melbourne? What about Richmond?
I think Richmond is at play for...
How's Dick going to go there? Dick Wynne?
Well, again, very well-known, very long-term member, so that does count for something. But as I said, if the swing is goes on to the Greens, and if there is disillusion, not with Dick himself, but with the Labor Party, you know, if there is an anti-government feeling, then they're more likely to park their vote, and they'll park it somewhere else, and more likely, therefore, to park it with the Greens. So he really is as dependent on the performance of the government as he is himself. And again, I think that's one that the Greens will be very confident about.
Now, just quickly, Julie Bishop says she's lonely. She's the only woman in cabinet. She's lonely.
I think that we should hold that one, Macca, and come back after a very short break
If Peter Credlin gets up in Menzies, she could join the cabinet.
Promise me you won't be her campaign manager, Macca.
No, you will. And I'm going to work hard for Peter.
Now, you're listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca, Robert Doyle, the Lord Mayor, and myself, Tass. We'll be back very shortly because
there's more.
A unique mix of...
You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca, Tass and Robert Doyle. We'll show you respect, Lord Mayor.
Thank you.
That's the end of it.
Thank you.
More than
I expected.
We've had some messages. Tim Wilson is a gay man. No shit. He doesn't represent Goldstein at all. I'd like to see more diversity in our political class that reflects modern-day Australia.
I completely agree with that.
That's exactly what we were saying in the break there.
Our society has changed significantly from white middle-class males.
Being a white middle-class male, turning on my own as you do, I went up
to Parliament. It's like a convention, actually, of white middle-class males.
I very rarely go back to the Parliament of Victoria, but I was asked by the Wurundjeri elders to come for the reading of the bill that was about the Yarra River, and it was quite a significant bill. It does contain Indigenous First Peoples languages for the first time, and it's very important. You know, Burrung is very important to our First Peoples. So I was quite honoured to be asked to go, and there they were sitting there, and they all spoke. But what struck me was, looking across the chamber, the whole chamber, it was full of blokes like me, old, tired, white, you know. And I just thought, you know, I remember when I first entered Parliament so long ago, you'd look at these people who'd spent, you know, 18 years here, and you'd think, God, how have you lasted 18 years? It's, you know, have a look at you. And, you know, well, there were people who were elected with me in 1992 who were still there, and people who were elected in 1988 who are still there. And, you know, it's very interesting, isn't it? The government has made a rule that says if you're a CEO of a government enterprise, then 10 years is your term.
Yes.
That's it. They don't seem to have that same rule for politicians. Now, I shouldn't speak because I've just won a third term. That will take me 12 years, but I would put it that I'm in a completely different class.
Of course.
So I do recognise there is a little bit of self-interest and hypocrisy in there, but that did strike me. That comment that it should be more reflective of modern-day Australia. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, but...
If you look at what's happening on the government side of the benches at the moment, pretty much all of those that came in around about the 99 election are retiring. Almost all of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's about 10 or 12 seats that have been vacated or will be vacated.
And that's healthy.
And pre-selection battles are beginning, so that's going to get ugly for Labor behind the scenes, of course. A lot of that will end up being publicly washed and publicly exposed. Mm. We tend not to see those sorts of battles on the Liberal side as much, though.
Oh, I don't know. What about a bit of our branch stacking going on with... What? Michael Kroger's mates?
Oh, cut it out. I mean...
Finn Review was wrong,
was it? Well, a newspaper wrong? How could that be? You're quite right, Macca. I take it all back. A Fairfax newspaper being inaccurate around facts about the Liberal Party? Surely not. You know, you've just trumped me.
we'll get Hawthorne on the phone. Or Joe Aston.
Yeah, good.
Okay, yeah. I think that we should change
something. No, hang on. So just another one here. What about Michael Danby? And one here, it's time Michael Danby, your friend, retires, Macca. Oh, I don't know. I know Michael and I know him well, but I think that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, Macca doesn't have any friends.
No, he's too outspoken on Israel. Ari Suss is a contender for his seat.
Yeah, he's a good young man.
Well, both Rob and I think that it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time.
Talented young man.
Have they asked Lindsay? Does he still work for Lindsay?
I don't know.
It does, actually.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
Well, as far as I know, the last time I saw him was the only time that I've been to Avalon Airport.
Oh, good heavens.
Well, was he directing traffic in the car park? Or
no, he was getting a flight. Or well, there
Avalon.
For a meeting or something.
At Avalon?
Right? Avalon.
Oh, Lynn did make him take a cheapie.
He wouldn't need it. Directing traffic at Avalon would be one of the easy jobs in the world.
I know. Oh, here comes a car. I don't know. It's just driving past.
That's right, yeah.
And, okay.
And sorry,
okay.
One other. Sadly, there was a homophobic attack at the Ormond Anglican Church this week after a marriage equality panel.
Do you know about that? What happened?
I did read a little bit about it. I'm not really across it. The question is, how nasty can this campaign be? Well, it's still got a few weeks to go. Like,
actually, like four.
Yeah.
Four, is it four?
Like 4 weeks to go.
Yeah.
It has been nasty. It has been nasty.
Yeah, but you know the interesting part? To me, these are the fringes of the yes and the no vote.
I'm sorry, Rob.
Yeah.
You can't say that the yes campaign has been as brutal as the no campaign.
I don't think that's right, but I think you would also concede that there's been bad behaviour on both sides.
No, I'm not going to accept that.
Okay.
I'm not going to accept that because essentially what the yes campaign has been asking for all along is respect and equality.
Yeah.
And what the no campaign has continually been doing is clouding the issues, running on a campaign of parenting, religious freedom, political correctness, and muckraking.
I don't disagree with you, but I don't think you should. Oh, look, okay, a silly old woman who used to play tennis is giving a speaking gig, you know, in Collins Street, and an angry mob turns up there, shouting and chanting and waving and abusing and all the rest of it. I mean, that's the sort of behaviour we want? I mean, really? Who cares?
I think we
can violently disagree with what she said, and we should, and we should call it out for the nonsense that it was. But is that sort of behaviour, when someone goes to speak at a private event, is that acceptable?
I think there's a difference between, and I accept some individuals on both sides have behaved badly, but what the official campaigns have done, the official campaigns, so, you know, the yes campaigns have said and what the no campaigns have said, I think, and I stand by what Tess said, the no campaign has run a campaign
based on lies and misinformation.
No, but I didn't talk about the official campaign. I'd have to agree with you there. And remember, I am a part of the official yes campaign.
Yes,
so
I
don't disagree
with
you on that. But what I've said is that some of the behaviours of individuals have been less than helpful, I think. Mm. But the point I was trying to make is that in our community, when people behave like that, it has the opposite effect of what they intend.
Mm.
People look at it and they say, hey, hang on, because the thing that's come through from me in this whole campaign, the thing that's resonated with people as I've talked to them about it is fairness.
Yes.
And that's what, to me, that's the word I use most often. The people I'm trying to get to now are the people like the tradies out in Narre Warren who think, yeah, of course they should be able to marry, but bugger me, I'd rather go to the footy than vote. What I'm trying to do is to get those people to say, come on, you want to live in a fair community, then you've got to vote. And I'm confident that if we can get those people out, then we'll have a great victory. But as I say, I don't like inappropriate, disrespectful behaviour from anybody. And I hope I would never show it. It hasn't been shown to me so far in this campaign.
Look, I am going to concede a little bit.
Hang on. Let's make a note, Robert.
No, that's all right. I'll let you leave it at that. But, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? That's what we have to do now. Just think about, you know, what is going to resonate with people who will vote yes, but probably aren't terribly motivated to vote.
Yeah.
And that concept of fairness is the one thing that really, really gets out there.
Paul would like a tradie in Narre Warren.
That was off air, Macca. Come on, there's no respect.
Oh, we'd all like a tradie in Narre Warren.
I've seen too many examples of bad behaviour.
Yep.
Inciting of violence.
Yep. That's just not acceptable.
There's a priest in the southeastern suburbs who called on his congregation to get their guns and shoot the gays and those people who support them.
That's just
not acceptable behaviour.
Oh, it's not just so not when you've it's got actually, it's illegal.
And when you have, and nobody's done anything about it. Police have been informed about this, and there's been no follow up action. I'll come back to that.
Yeah.
And then when you have a bunch of people who are just screaming outside, protesting against a talk. It doesn't compare, I'm afraid.
No, I didn't say it did, but you're moving the argument a bit. I just said I don't like bad behaviour on either side. And you know, you're pretty active on social media. Some of the stuff on social media, you know, I think is pretty tough. Nevertheless, as I say, I think we're tying ourselves up in the wrong knots here. The point I was trying to make is that sort of disrespectful behaviour is likely to be counterproductive. And secondly, we've got to get people out to actually vote in these last 4 weeks.
Yes, I agree. Social media, just finally on this, I mean, social media, yes, some of it's been pretty rude and crude. Keyboard bandits, one-handed typists, all those people, you know, don't take any notice of it.
Yeah,
look, they're oxygen thieves.
Look, that's right, but there's a certain... There are parts of Twitter that I love, for instance. You know, you get some wonderful movements and comments, and it can be really helpful and it keeps you abreast. And then you see some really cowardly type of behaviour because you can be as anonymous as you wish to be. And that to me is, you know, as bad as saying it in person. It's out there on social media, but just without the responsibility of identifying yourself.
The switchboard's on fire, isn't it, Mac?
Yes.
This morning we've had a lot of comments about this very issue. The billboard in Fitzroy, of course, I think Nurse James sent that message in. Vote no, protect your kids. WTF says the caller.
Yeah, I know. And but again, anyone reasonable looking at that. On the other hand, you then get people like Rick Holland, who's now the senior minister at St Michael's, putting a marriage equality poster on the outside of that venerable church in Collins Street.
Yes.
You know, and that's, you know, we have it, we've been giving out those little decals to businesses.
Yes.
And that's been really successful to say, you know, people just saying, not trying to shove it down your throat, but just saying, you know, yes. And that, I think, is a very powerful way of getting the message out there to people. And you're just saying to people, look, I'm going to write an article, an op-ed in the next week, and I'm going to try to focus on that idea of this is, you mightn't have wanted a plebiscite in the first place, now it's here, okay? So now that it's here, exercise your democratic right and have your say, because this is a really important issue, and it's a comment I make the whole time. I'm very proud of our city, very proud of how tolerant it is, very proud of how diverse it is, but it makes me very sad that there's one group in our community who do not have the same rights as the rest of us. And that's, you know, why I say, for me, it's a campaign about fairness and getting that across to people, because that's such an Australian value, the fair go.
Yes.
And that's why I say, you know, the people who I think would think in their own hearts, yeah, of course, yes is fine, no problems with me, you know, but will they vote?
Yes.
And that's
the... So we've had 57.5% of the population. Vote, which is pretty extraordinary in such a short space of time.
Absolutely.
How far will we get it up to 70%, do you think?
I think that would be hard. Ireland finished up around about 60, and they were a very engaged community. Shorter period of time, you're quite right. The people who are really passionate have probably voted already.
Yeah.
So the ones we're fighting for now are the ones... That's why I think these last 4 weeks are so important, because these are the people who are more likely to say, yeah, of course, yes, you know, what's the argument here, but it isn't high enough on their radar for them to actually just put that little tick in the box, seal the envelope and send it off. So
whether
that's going to be
my focus. Whether it's a yes or a no.
Well, that's true. You know, that's I hope it's yes, but that's true for both sides. I think, though, and some of the things that you've said I think are right, I think, though, that the adherents, the rusted-ons, I think the no's have probably voted already.
I think so.
I don't know that last 40% is as fertile voting ground for the no side as it is for our side.
A thought before we go to the break. I thought of a fundraiser for the Liberal Party in New South Wales. Two of their prominent members, Christine Forster and Tony Abbott, they should have a webcast of the Abbott family Christmas dinner.
I'd bypass both of those and go straight to Tony's daughter, Frances.
Yes.
And if you haven't seen Frances's clip on YouTube, have a look at that.
It's fantastic.
It's elegant. It is respectful, but it's really powerful.
Yeah, I reposted it. In fact, I think that SatMag Twitter should actually repost it, Macca. It's very good. Mm. Interestingly enough, before we do go, Macca, New Zealand vote was only 49.6% yes.
To 48
no.
It was very close.
Very fine. I didn't realise it was so close.
But you know where the difference between second and last is? The spelling. You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca, Robert Doyle and Tass. Saturday Magazine, Macca, Tass and His Eminence, Lord Bollard, Robert Dolly Doyle, Lord Mayor. Now, we've got a message. Do you want to read it out, Robert?
No, I think I'll leave that to you, Macca.
Oh, okay.
I think this one's aimed at me.
I think it might be aimed at you. It says, And I didn't want to read this out because I think it's a bit disrespectful.
I actually don't think you should, Macca.
No.
Huh? No, we don't want to deal with disrespectful behaviour. We want to role model respectful, courteous,
yep,
kind, good, positive behaviour on this show, don't we?
Yes.
And that's why we've had a whole range of nutters here. We've tried to role model positive behaviour with them as well.
Let me just
Shall I name them?
It's we have had some ferals over the years, Tass, haven't we?
And they've fitted in perfectly, haven't they?
Anyway, we want to talk about gun control. But firstly, your view, Robert, COAG agreed to provide driver's licence photos to the federal government.
Yeah.
What makes me suspicious is when someone, any politician, effectively wraps himself in the flag, or the first thing they say, it's about national security. Okay, good argument. Yep. Yes, you can make that. We all trust government not to misuse this material, don't we?
Well, we do, but most of this material is available anyway, isn't it?
Yes, but not centrally.
Well, but hang on. If you've travelled, you will have facial recognition technology that's photographed you as you leave the airport, that's recognised your passport. So, in a sense, it's already there. If you think about universality of data, think about your Medicare card. We've all got that.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, to me, let me put it this way. We've got cameras, security cameras at the City of Melbourne, and they're very, very powerful, and we're putting more in. They do have the capacity for facial recognition, and if we were looking for someone and we knew who we were looking for, then it's just a really useful tool to track down that person. Misuse of data, sure, it's always possible, but there is so much data collected on us now, I'm not too frightened by this move, I must say.
So you think this is about joining the dots?
I think it is. Yeah. I think it's about coordination of information that already exists in the public domain.
So facial recognition is taking it one step further. It is really about detection on the streets and in public spaces. Isn't that an invasion of privacy?
Well, I think this might be a big statement. I think privacy as we once knew it is something of an illusion.
Mm.
You know, you don't... I mean, we've all seen those films where, someone walks into a shop and the hologram says, good morning, Tass, as you go past, which is, talking about that facial recognition stuff. But to be honest, if you walk through our city now, you're going to be photographed, you're going to be on CCTV, all over the place. There's no question about that. So I think to some extent, privacy is an illusion.
And it's not just the city. It's actually all over the place.
Everywhere.
I mean,
yep.
It's interesting, even supermarkets these days now have CCTV cameras.
Absolutely.
All over the place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Small shops, people's homes, all over the place.
Yeah, look, I do understand that. And if it prevents one attack or it solves a crime, yes, there's a very big case for it. My only concern is that there is the potential for government to misuse it, and I don't trust them enough. Either side, any side.
How would they misuse it, Macca?
They'll work out a way.
Well, hang on. You can't just say that.
So give us an example.
Yeah, well, how could a facial recognition, for instance, image be misused?
Okay. If there was someone in, call it broadly, the security services, that had something against Tass on a personal level, right, could effectively be stalking him and knowing where he is and what he's up to.
Okay.
In violation.
But that's not government. That's an individual.
Well, government allows it to happen.
Well, no, it doesn't allow it to
Macca.
Happen.
It does.
That's a bow too far. And look, you will recall, I remember being in Parliament years ago, and the police force had a problem with the misuse of the LEAP database, which was their law enforcement assistance program. The most mentioned person was Kylie Minogue, because they could find out where she lives. But, so individuals doing it is different, and that's what I think is...
I've had some nasty experiences with Australian border farce.
Okay.
And, I know...
You've been planning that language, Macca. Border farce.
I know there is someone in Australian border farce who actually tracks my travel.
Yeah.
And not for reasons that are official.
Okay.
But that's not government.
No, it's an individual.
That's an individual.
Yeah, that's an individual.
The system allows it to happen, just as it did with LEAP.
Well, but...
If it happens once, it's once too often.
Yeah, but that's different from saying I don't trust government.
Well, I don't.
Well, I think the benefits... That sort of criminal behaviour is unacceptable, but I think the benefits are greater than the potential individual drawbacks.
I'm with you, Robert. I think the horse has bolted.
Yep.
I think that it's far too late.
It's already done 3 laps of the track.
Well, exactly. You talk to young people now and they have a very different conception of what privacy means compared to us older folk.
When they go to a club now, they hand over their licenses, their identification, they're happy to be, you know, photographed, and that's what they need to get onto those premises. That's it. They're asked, you know, turn out your pockets and, you know, things that you couldn't do in the public domain.
And they've been publicly documenting their life and lifestyles from day dot.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I say to my kids, be careful of your digital footprint, you know, and just be very aware of it.
Sure, but I look at my nieces and nephews at the age of 5, they've all got Instagram accounts.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
At the age of 5.
Yep.
Recording, you know, every single step.
Yeah.
Party time, social time, family time.
My Henry's not there yet, but he can use a mobile phone. He can use the app. He knows how to get into it. He knows.
He rang me the other day.
Did he?
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be surprised.
Yeah. I mean, I am not afraid of Big Brother.
No. Right?
Because I know how to counter it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we have surrendered our freedoms. But interestingly, a lot of the people that absolutely complain the most about this, some of the campaigners, you look at their social media, I mean, what do they think? Only people they know look at it?
Yeah.
We have an interesting comment here from 317 Macca, who claims that it's a bit like Big Brother. Sadly, our freedoms are being diminished by these laws. The listener is deeply concerned about liberties being taken away. Why does government want to generate more fear? So there's a number of messages in that.
And I think they're legitimate, you know, I think they're absolutely legitimate statements to make. And it would be there'd be a body of people who would say, yes, tick, tick, tick to that. And I get that. It's a difficult debate. But as I say, I think it's a matter of coordination rather than generating new information.
I think for me, the most compelling argument that was put forward was that made by the Premier himself, Victorian Premier, who said that you know, there'll be people out here who will be screaming about this and will be critiquing it, but he said, but as a leader, as a political leader, he's faced with having to make a decision about this based on evidence and science and expectations and expectations about community safety. And I thought that was a very compelling argument.
Yeah.
It's not a decision that I would want to have to make.
Look, it's hard, isn't it? But you've sort of got to, if you're in a position of leadership, you've got to decide to make a decision, recognising that it is going to be unpopular and you will not be able to persuade an element of the community who, by the way, do have a legitimate argument. That's a tough one. But I agree with the Premier.
And I hear somebody from their sickbed asking, how many terrorist attacks have we actually had?
It's more how many we've stopped.
Well, we stopped one just a couple of months ago, and it was by facial recognition of 4 young men who had been radicalised over the internet, and we caught them in the intersection of Flinders Street and Swanston Street, and we tracked them through there, and we were able to prevent that.
Yes.
There's no doubt that they were looking for a target for such an attack. So the point is that the technology that we have already is being used to protect us. The best tool we've got, though, is not this digital stuff. The best tool we've got is information from the community, which is why you cannot alienate the Islamic faith, and you need moderate Islam on your side against radical Islam, and people, I don't think, understand that. So
there you go, 200. Get back to bed and get better.
Yeah. When we talk about terrorist attacks, I know we don't have time to talk about it, but we were going to talk about the terrible events of Las Vegas and the United States and the guns there. You know, I'm normally a pretty optimistic person, but when Sandy Hook happened and 27 children were killed and they still did nothing, I thought to myself, that's the end of the argument. If you don't do something now, sheer numbers next time won't do it. You know, sheer horror of Sandy Hook and those little kids, it's just a culture that I'm so pleased that we've never had in Australia. And I think, you know, love him or hate him, and there are people who do both to John Howard, I still think his finest achievement was pushing through gun control, which is where he had to make that argument that you were just talking about.
Yes.
Knowing that people would disagree with him, and knowing there were some people on his own side, principally, who would mount an argument against it,
and be a leader as opposed to
You know, we have to go, it's really simple. One of the greatest arguments or some of the incredible arguments made in favour of owning guns, the simple fact is, if it was controlled to the extent that it should be in the US, you wouldn't have the level of gun crime that you do. Simple. You have a gun, someone's going to use it. If they don't have a gun, they can't use it.
Yeah.
There's something for you to read over the weekend. I printed it off for you. It's from the New York Times.
Thank you.
About politics and guns. You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca, Tass. Lord Mayor Robert Doyle is leaving us. Some news, then some more.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.